Welcome back to the BizNews Rugby Show. This week on the show, our BizNews Rugby insider, Rory Steyn, got a sit down with Springbok Archon Nick Mallett as they previewed the Investec Champions Cup and EPCR Challenge Cup finals happening this weekend and talked a lot more. Let's listen in.
So, BizNews Tribe, good morning to all of you. We have a great surprise this morning for our preview of the European Challenge Cup tomorrow night, as well as the Investec Champions Cup final on Saturday afternoon. Because joining us today is somebody who's been described as rugby royalty or Springbok rugby royalty, the one and only Nick Mallett. So the reason, BizNews Tribe, that I was so desperate to get Nick to agree to come on our show, and he very graciously did that with very little notice, I only called him yesterday, is because two of the four clubs playing in this weekend's finals, those being Lyon tomorrow night and Bordeaux-Bègles on Saturday afternoon, are French clubs. And Nick played his rugby in France, speaks French fluently, understands the rugby culture, the people, and the culture of France in general. But he's also coached in Italy. He was head coach of Italy for a number of years once he finished his 17-match unbroken run as coach of the Springboks. So, as I said, we're literally speaking to rugby royalty. But Nick, as I welcome you, perhaps a great way to start is explaining to the BizNews Tribe how you and I met. And I'd like to hear it from your view, because that's a great story in and of itself. So welcome, Nick, to BizNews Rugby.
Thanks very much, Rory. And it's very kind of you to invite me. Your message came through to me and you said you're calling in a favor. And I must admit the favor you did me and South African rugby was enormous. I was coaching the Springboks, and Gary Tashman had been the captain, and we'd managed to get 17 consecutive wins. And you very kindly spoke to President Mandela and said it would be nice to invite these guys to lunch and just to congratulate them on their achievements. And I couldn't believe it, getting the call that he'd accepted that, and that we were invited to have a lunch with him. It was Arthur Peterson was our manager, and I remember it was the three of us: Arthur Peterson, myself, and Gary. And I think we were allocated half an hour, and it was just a wonderful lunch. I remember his secretary had to come and get him to stop talking, because, I mean, I can talk a lot, but I think I was outspoken by Madiba that day. He was just incredible. We talked about sport, and we talked about how it can unite the country, and how which it has done so successfully throughout the history of our country since democracy. And he was just a wizard at understanding how people's minds work. He knew that rugby, if he could get rugby and the supporters of rugby onto his side, it would make a tremendous difference to South Africa. We managed to win two World Cups. Well, we won in 95. He played a massive role in that. Unfortunately, we lost in 99, but we won again in 2003, and then won 2007 with Jake White, and then with Russie in 2015 and in 2019 and 2023. So that lunch was just very, very special. And I remember getting on to talking to him about the George Foreman Muhammad Ali fight. He was a great boxing fan, and they were all batting, obviously, for Muhammad Ali, and it was lovely hearing his passion around that. And I think in the end, if I'm not mistaken, Rory, we were there for over an hour. So very, very privileged. Thank you very much.
No, you, Nick, I tell you, what a privilege to be able to do something like that. I mean, at the end of the day, I had absolutely no business even asking him that. But, you know, as a rugby fan, you know, there were some unfortunate things said beforehand. But then you guys came and you ran, you hit that 17-match run. And I just felt, you know, really, we need to acknowledge this. And I went to him, you know, as I had access to do. But I had no business, you know, setting up lunches. And he immediately said, absolutely, let's do this. this, and he was enthusiastic from, and I mean, that just is borne out by the fact that, you know, he went over double the amount of time allocated. And as you said, his secretary had to come and call him. So what a great introduction, Nick. And thank you so much, you know, for, on behalf of all of us, for what you guys did at, you know, in getting Springbok Rugby's image, where it should be. And, you know, it's the one thing that you've got over Rossi, eh? I mean, Rossi's won 2 World Cups, but he hasn't got 17 straight victories on the bounce, Nick. So, yeah, you've got that on him.
Let me assure you, I'm not even close to what he's managed to do. 2 World Cups in the British Lions series win. I mean, you can't do better than that. It's fantastic. It really is fantastic. We're in a golden period of rugby at the moment, and we must really appreciate it.
Yeah, and you know, we're heading obviously for this three-peat, but I fear the day that this great era ends, because it's got to, you know, all dynasties, all eras, all whatever you call them, epochs, they come to an end at some stage, Nick. But while we on the horse, let's ride it. You know, it's a wonderful time to be a rugby supporter. So, Nick, before we talk about the two finals, why don't you just embellish a little bit on your playing days in France? It's just, you've got such a colourful past. I mean, you can choose whether or not you want to talk about the two-fingered salute to the Springbok selectors. You know, you played 2 test matches, right? So speak a bit about your playing career in France, and then coaching in Italy, and then the box and all that, and then we can talk about the finals. Yeah, thank you.
If people are rugby supporters, they might be aware of it. But I was 28 years old, and I had an opportunity to go over and play rugby in France. And it was during the apartheid era. There were they'd cancelled the French tour and the New Zealand tour in 1985. And I was really hoping to have been able to play for the box against them at that period. So I just thought, you know, let's use rugby to travel. And I spent 5 years in a very small little town called St. Claude in the Jura region. It was in the second division. And I managed to take them up into the first division. And then from there, I spent 5 years, and I actually was working in a bar. They gave me a bar. They couldn't pay you money to play, but they gave you a business. And so I was able to generate income through working in my own business, which was like a bar. And then I went up to Paris, and I was the rugby coach of a, and they were allowed to pay me as a member of the at that time, I was taken on by the mairie de Boulogne-Billancourt, and they, which is the mayor, and he appointed me as a sports guy on their payment roll, and I coached Boulogne-Billancourt team, and also took them from the second division to the first division, and I was 36, 37 when I came back to South Africa, and you know, didn't think I would go into coaching. I was a player coach at the time, so I was playing for the teams I coached. And then I was asked to coach False Bay, which is a small club here in Cape Town. And we had a couple of very good years. We had good results. We managed to beat Stellenbosch out at Stellenbosch, we had really decent results. We came third in the competition here. And from that, I was offered the Boerland coaching job. And Boerland is a very small union and had come 19th out of 24th. And we managed to get them up, I think, if I'm not mistaken, to, I think, 7th in my first year and 5th in the second year. So following that success with Boerland, I was then asked to coach the box. And then that was a fantastic opportunity. And I had a very, very good team. And we went on that 17 match winning run. And then sadly, you know, we had some then setbacks. We got to the semi-final of the World Cup, and in 1999 got knocked out by a drop goal from Larkham. And it's one of those things, you know, it's perhaps, I mean, I've spoken about it a lot. I think we missed leadership there, and I should have taken Gary probably to that World Cup as well. He would have helped a lot. But following that, I then coached back in France, did Stade Francais again, and not again. I was appointed to coach Stade Francais after coaching the box. And I had a good, very good side there, and we won the French competition, the French top 14 twice in 2003 and 2004. I came back to South Africa, and then I was invited to go and coach Italy. So I did 4 years coaching the Italian team, which was, you know, I had two great opportunities, coaching the Springboks and coaching Stade Français. They were two really good teams, and you were expected to win when you coach good teams. But when you coach teams, the smaller teams, then you must be competitive. And so, you know, I'm quite proud of the fact that False Bay was a small team, Borland was a small team, Italy in that context was a small team, and we turned those teams into very competitive teams. And then I came back to South Africa in 2012 and was going to take 1 year off. I interviewed for the England job and didn't get it. And then was offered it in 2015 and turned it down because I was enjoying working on SuperSport so much. So then I've been with SuperSport until 2020. My contract, a full-time contract, came to an end at the end of last year. And I'm used on an ad hoc basis now with SuperSport, and I really still enjoy it. So very lucky to have, earned money in my life through rugby, playing it, coaching it, and talking about it.
Well, Nick, I dare say that you are probably, or arguably, everyone's favorite rugby pundit. So the more that Jean de Villiers and Schalk Burger and those boys that are now doing that job, the more they go on leave and take time off, the more we can hear you as you stand in for them. So long may that continue.
Rory. Yeah, I must say that Skulk and Jean and Victor, they and Shimmy and Brayton, they're doing fantastically. They're really, really good. So, I mean, and I've missed others. So, yeah, we're very lucky at SuperSport. We've got some very, very good young guys coming through, and I love working with them whenever I get an opportunity. It's just fantastic still to be involved, quite frankly.
Yeah, and it shows, you know, Nick, the passion and the enjoyment and even the joy, may I say, with which you speak about rugby shines through. We had Brady on our show last week because we were previewing the last round of the URC. And so you're right. The SuperSport has assembled a fine team. And I just wanted to ask you, Nick, whether or not you perhaps ran into my uncle at False Bay Rugby. His name was Mickey Burr. B-E-H-R is the spelling. And he played hooker, but I think he played hooker for the second 15 until well into his 40s, way back in the amateur days. Yeah, yeah. But if you didn't, you may have started after him.
The years I was there, I think were 90, let me work it out. I came back in 93. I started 93, 94, and then I coached, it was 94, 95, I think I coached False Bay, and then 96, 97, I coached Borland. So, I don't remember him that well, but I'm trying to work out. I was 38 then, so it was about 30 years ago. So I'm not sure how old your dad is.
No. So he's since passed. I think that he was done by the time you got there. Nick, so there are two stories that I just want to touch on really quickly. And the one is, I played a bit of most of my club rugby. I played on the left wing, and I will never forget that try that Slupchips scored when we won the Tri Nations under you. And you speak about how it kind of was discussed almost at the captain's run the day before. He said to Henry Honeyball, "Hey, I've got a move that I think we should try." And it worked. And I mean, I don't think they laid a finger on him. And off he comes off the left wing on a cutting in on a line and scores under the sticks. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about that? 97 or 98, was it, Nick?
It was 98 in New Zealand, actually. We hadn't won there for 17 years, I think. It was, through that. The guys weren't in awe of New Zealand, but you know they hadn't not having beaten them overseas was a big thing, and we needed to turn that around. And I remember being on the plane I was chatting to Henry Honeyball, and I said, he was the greatest defensive fly off I've ever seen. And I mean, he tackled harder than a loose forward. He was just incredibly courageous. And I said to Lem, I said, listen. Come, think up a move that you will struggle to defend against. And, he's a very quiet guy, Liam. And so he said, no, I'll do that. And I forgot about it. And then it was a week later not quite captain's practice, it was on a Wednesday practice. And we were on the way to the practice. And Lem came, tapped me on the shoulder. He said, "Coach, I've got one." And I said, "What have you got, Lem?" You know, because I'd forgotten. And he said to me, you asked me about a move. So I said, no, fantastic. What is the move? And he said, listen, I think this might work. You know, you've got Yost is incredibly dangerous and they're going to be worried about him. So if I take a flat pass from Yost and then he comes on a run round, a hard run round, he said, I think if I run at Kronfeld, who's the open side flanker, and Yost comes on a hard run round, I think he's going to draw Mertens out. And if he draws Mertens out, that's going to open up a gap for Slappies, for Slapchips to come Peter or so, to come in on my outside. So it's basically, I'll run it at Kronfeld, dummy to Yost, and play behind Yost back to Peter or so. And so I said, okay, well, let's do it at practice. We'll do it once. And Franco Smith was the fly half for our reserve team. And he didn't know what had happened. He said, what, you know, we... Slappies in practice ran straight through, and Franco said, what happened there? You know, he just, so I thought, well, if Franco couldn't read it, then Mertens, who wasn't a great defender, wouldn't read it either. And the most wonderful thing was, you know, we got that left-hand scrum just in exactly the right place. And there's a little by story to that. You see Henry Honeyball talking to Percy Montgomery and telling him to go on the blind side. And Percy's saying, why? And so he said, just go on the blind side. And so Percy trotted off to the blind side. And you see Christian Cullen, who was actually under the poles, he starts moving to the blind side to mark Percy. And he goes behind the scrum, which then opens up. Once the gap goes through the fly-off channel, there's no one there. You know, he went straight through. In touch rugby, he would have scored a try. Rory, it was unbelievable. And I remember we were sitting next, in those days, we were sitting next to the New Zealand coaching staff. They were in a bench just a bit further along. And there was dead silence. It was almost like someone had had a forward pass. And I just heard, oh, shit, from their side.
No, it was beautiful, Nick. And I mean, it was almost as I recall it, because it was so extraordinary. The All Blacks were... They were confused. Even as they walked back to go and stand under the poles, they didn't know what had happened. So as confused as Franco. And then the other one I wanted you to tell, because I've heard you tell it at a breakfast, Nick, is that story about when you were coaching Russie, and he comes to you and he tells you, listen, he's noticed that on a line out at a certain part of the field, this is what the Aussies do. It's a flat ball to Larkham and then an inside pass to Joe Roth, and I'm going to go for the interception. Will you talk us through that one? It's a great story.
Yeah, it was actually a defensive lineout that they had. They would always throw it to John Eels, and that flow, he'd take a front ball. He would take it going forward, play it down to Jeremy Paul, their hooker. Jeremy Paul would pass to Gregan, the scrum off, and Gregan would pass behind Totai Kefu's back, who was the number eight, and he'd passed to Mortlock, and Mortlock would take it up, a midfield scrum, and then they would kick. It was a defensive kicking move where Latham and Larkham, one had a left foot, the other had a right foot. They would then have two options which side to kick. So it was a very good exit strategy. But Russie then said, you know, he came into my room and he said, you've often said to us, if we see something, you know, come and tell me. And he said, I've seen this thing, and I want to go for the interception between Gregan and Mortlock because you've got me tackling Kefu and he never gets the ball. So I said, well, you never know, he might get it. So we organized that Yost would defend on Kefu as a number nine. And I said to Russie, listen, you have a go. You know, if you see it coming, go for the interceptions. And we were playing in Durban, and I mean, he intercepts the ball, he goes and scores. And the two kickers, Latham and Larkham, dive on his back as he goes over. And he scores the try. I mean, it was like, it was exactly as he had predicted. He scores the try, but the TMO at that time asked the wrong question. He said to the referee, did you see the ball being grounded? And because he had two Australians on his back, the TMO had to say, I didn't see it grounded. So the referee gave us a 5-meter scrum, which was, it was really sad because Russie had scored that try. We would have converted it. And we actually lost that game by 1 point. I mean, it's incredible. You know, had that try been awarded, we would have won that game. And perhaps I would have saved my job. You never know.
No, thanks, Nick. I mean, those are just two wonderful stories. And, you know, as I said, you tell them so well. So, all right. So let's come. Tomorrow night, we've got the European Challenge Cup final. Both of these games are played in Cardiff. Always the EPCR on the Friday night and then the Investec Champions Cup the following day, Saturday RV. So big game, big weekend of rugby in Cardiff. And we've got our friends from Bath with Finn Russell calling the shots and orchestrating things there, up against Lyon. So what are your thoughts? Neutral ground, so there's no home ground advantage. How do you see this?
Yeah, I think you've got to go with Bath on this one. We've got a South African, obviously a really good South African a connection there through Johan van Gaan, the coach, you know, and also Thomas du Toit, who's been playing absolutely outstanding rugby in the Bath team. That Bath side they've got a very powerful pack of forwards. And the way they dismembered Leicester last weekend, I think they scored 5 tries against Leicester, who are a really good side. They're in the top 3 or 4 in the Premiership. I mean, it proved that even though they've got a big final coming up, you know, they're just going through they just believe in the way they're playing. And as I say, they've got the scrum offers that back line so much good ball. And Finn Russell has been playing outstanding rugby there at 10. You know, the variation he has on his wide passes and short passes. You know, he delays the pass, the double pump. He's on the front foot. He is a very, very good attacking fly off. And they are top of the Premiership. And when you go across and you look at Lyon, I think they are 11th or 12th in the top 14, 11th, I think. So they're down the list. And obviously, they're focusing on this as their main opportunity to win a cup. The French are always dangerous, but my money is on the sort of professionalism and also the better team. I just think Bath are very, very good this year. I mean, the fact that they're playing in this European, in this Challenge Cup is probably incorrect. You know, they should have been up in the Champions Cup. They've got, being top of the Premiership, they would have challenged, Northampton and Bigl and Toulon and Toulouse, the guys who are the tough, Leinster, the big teams in the Champions Cup. I think Bath would have pushed them hard this year. So this being a second tier competition, I think that they'll do well. I think they're going to win it.
Yeah, I must agree with that, Nick. And as you say, if you can give Finn Russell front football, he just has so much time and so many options. You know, Kyle was asked, he threw a chicken wing pass, which was probably his easiest try ever against Wales a couple of years ago. And so they asked him after the game about that. And he said, listen, I've just learned that when you're playing with Finn, you have to expect the ball all the time and from anywhere, because he finds a way. He finds a way to offload it with a, you know, one-hand pass through the tackle, whatever, you know, behind a player's back. He is, I think he's a little magician, Finn, and I love watching Finn play. Just back to Thomas du Toit, Nick, do you think that he's the top scrummaging tight head now? Because it would kind of be between him and Quadzilla, right? I mean, those two tight heads of ours who are not even really the first choice Springbok tight heads are really on top of their game right now, right?
Yeah. I think obviously with Malherbe out and Koch getting to the end of his career as well, we're looking for a strong tight head, and Thomas has got the ability to play both on the loose head side and the tight head side, which is a massive advantage, and it's also something that Russie loves. But we've got Oxenchair at loose head, who's probably the best in the world, so why move? We won't move. We'll keep him there, and I think Thomas is going to push hard for the tight head position. At the same time, you've also got Kaba Kanyi from the Lions, who's coming through, and then you've got Nietlin Fushi from the Stormers, who's been behind Malherbe throughout his career, but now has really shot forward, and he's probably won more penalties at tight head than any other player for South Africa this year. He's really done well. So I think we're in a very good position with those three players, and obviously Don Heumann is an outstanding scrum coach, and we'll be as powerful as we were last season, I think. And Thomas, what he adds as well is his ball carrying ability. I mean, he was the leading try scorer for Bath at one point, you know, despite the fact that they had Finn Russell. Yeah, he was really good.
No, that's outstanding. It's such a good place to be with our wealth of talent in those positions. And then, Nick, then we come to, you played for Bordeaux, didn't you? Isn't that your team? No. St. Cloud and Racing. Sorry, you did say that. Yeah. St. Cloud and Racing. Who was it that played for Bordeaux? One of our guys. There's a South African who played at Bordeaux around about the time that you were in France. I forget who it is.
Yeah, I wouldn't know that, because they were actually Begu in the second division and then got up into the first division around that time. Yeah, so they amalgamated. Bordeaux was one team and Begu was another team. And then it took them a bit of time, but they decided to amalgamate the two and join forces financially. And that made a massive difference to them. But they are really outstanding. I think that their backline must be...
That backline of theirs is sheer poison, man. It's so dangerous. With Damien Penaud and Louis Bielbiere.
Oh, Louis Bielbiere has been remarkable. He's their Colby, you know. He's their sniffer of opportunities. He scores tries. He's got a wonderful little kicking game on the front foot. You know, he's really what they do incredibly well. Both he and Penaud is when they end up by bringing the fullback up to defend the last player. You know, they isolate the covering blindside winger by putting little grubbers in behind and forcing that blindside winger. You know, he's in coffin corner. You know, he's in an area of the field where he can't get out. He can't kick a good touch finder. If he falls on the ball, you get turned over because they're very good at competing the ball on the ground. And often that is a 50-50 call anyway because of the pace that they've got running onto the ball. So, first of all, I think Jalibert plays very well at 10 for them. That he has controlled that big Bordeaux backline wonderfully well. They've got physicality and Moefana as well at centre. Luku has taken over as scrum half with huge experience. And so good 9 and 10, and then just these unbelievably good wingers. You know? And there was one game I watched where I think Jalibert, Penaud scored 6 tries. And I think Jalibert, there was this unbelievable connection between the two where every moment he knew where Penaud was going to be. He'd put a chip over the back line so Penaud could get it, or a grubber through, or a flat cross kick to Penaud who was out there. But he got the ball by passing to him and by grubbering, by chipping and by cross kicking. So they really have they've got a magnificent scoring ability. And they won that semi-final comfortably against Toulouse, 38 odd points. Yeah, so Northampton, I mean, who would have ever said they would beat Leinster away as they did, you know? And I think their best opportunity is to continue attacking, Rory. They've got to play that attacking game. They scored 5 tries against Leinster, and we know Jacques Nienaber and how good his defensive systems are.
They were 114-0 at the time. They'd beaten Twins 62-0, Glasgow 52-0, and Saints come and score 5 tries.
It just was absolutely mind-boggling, you know. There's a guy in that team, Rory, that I admire immensely, even though he's still only 22, and he reminds me a lot of Henry Honeyball, is Finn Smith. Finn Smith, who plays for Northampton, the fly half. If we're talking about Finn Russell and his ability to get the back line going, it's outstanding. But Finn Smith has got that same ability. He has the same ability to set players up. And his understanding of his back line runners and who's in space where and when he needs to pass the ball or kick the ball to them is brilliant. But on top of that, he's an unbelievably brave defender. I mean, the time they beat the Bulls, when they beat the Bulls at in Loftus, I think they only had 4 opportunities to score tries. They were in the 22 only 4 times, and they scored 4 tries. Whereas the Bulls probably had 15 opportunities and didn't manage to win the game. So Finn Smith at 10 is a key player for both Northampton, but also for the British Lions, I think. He's going to push Finn Russell hard, I think, for that 10 position. And remember, they too have Mitchell, who's the England fly, scrum off. So Mitchell, Finn Smith, and then Tommy Freeman has been absolutely outstanding on the wing. So we're talking, what's great about rugby, about this game, is we're talking about the backs as opposed to the forwards. The guys who could make the difference are the backline players. And I think that's wonderful, you know. I think that's wonderful. I think both Begley and Northampton will do their very best to get front football. But it is the ingenuity of the nines and tens of both these two teams and the striking ability of the back line that is going to make the difference in this final. I think it's going to be an absolute humdinger. And, you know, it's hard to call. It's really hard to call. But I think Beggs maybe on just 52% to 48%, you know, you go with Beggs. I just think overall they might have a better balanced team. Probably they've got lots of physicality in their forwards, and Northampton might be struggling a little bit in that area of the field. We have a South African, of course, in Prokkie there, who's playing in, you know, he's playing, and he had a fantastic game against Leinster. So, and he's been,
and how lucky to see his call up. Yeah, so lucky to see that, man. I mean, he really has. I mean, going, that's why players that go to Europe or Japan or anywhere, they just bring back IP that they may not have learnt or learnt as quickly. And it's just benefiting our rugby. So great to see Trockie called up there. I just want to come back and make a couple of comments. You know, you're talking about those wings of Bordeaux Beg. And the kiss of death is when a wing dies in those trams there. I don't think I've ever seen Louis Bielbiere die with the ball. And his option, as you said, is just to push that grubber behind the cover. And the kid is 21 or 22, man. He's, you know, we're going to see him forever. And then you've got Jalibert. Yes, he's got such maturity for someone so young, right? Him and Henry Pollock. I said the other day that world rugby needs these youngsters, Sasha, Henry Pollock, Louis Bielbiere, because it brings other youngsters in. These youngsters are always on TikTok. You know, they haven't got time to sit and watch an 80-minute game anymore. But when they see these guys and the magic that they can produce, it brings youngsters into the game, man. And we want that. You know, Nick, and then Jalibert, as we know, he had this very controversial departure from Toulouse, and then they play that semi-final, and he goes there with Bordeaux Beg in Toulouse, and he completely outplays Mpamak at you know, who's the current French Fluffy. I mean, he was outstanding, Jalibert. You know, another little magician, almost like Finn Russell. You know, and. And then you were talking about Finn Smith. I really like that kid. Again, only 22 years old. I remember the Calcutta Cup game, which Scotland really should have won. Scotland had all the possession. And that guy, I think he put in, I don't want to state this definitively, but it was that Finn Smith put in, I think, 15 tackles at 10 to stop a very, very good Scottish team. And they won that game by a point or two. Yeah, he's outstanding, Finn Smith. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I think there's been a South African connection there as well, because he was found or discovered by Alan Solomons, who was my assistant coach and was working at Worcester. And I think he was there that he was developed, and then he's moved on, obviously, to Northampton, a better club. So, you know, at such a young age, as you said, you're talking about these youngsters, Sasha, Finn Smith, Pollock. They're fearless. You know, young guys do not. They just, it's fantastic to watch, you know, it's to see these young players show off their talents and do it with such joy and such enjoyment. Bielbiere, exactly the same. So we are very privileged at the time.
We're privileged. I cannot agree with you more. That game on Saturday, man.
I mean, I remember there was the weekend at the World Cup where we watched South Africa play against France, and then we saw New Zealand, or vice versa, New Zealand, Ireland, and then South Africa, France. Probably the best weekend of rugby I've seen for absolute ages. And I think this game between Beg le Bordeaux and Northampton, I think from a club point of view, will reach that same height. They are two massively entertaining teams to watch. And even though our South African teams are not involved, I think anyone who loves rugby will really spend a good time watching this game.
No, I can't agree more. And we don't have a dog in the fight, so you can just enjoy the sheer beauty of the, you know. And they're both going to run, as you said. We hope for good weather in Cardiff, so that the, you know, the handling isn't affected by blooming rain or wind or anything, because the spectacle is mouthwatering. I've used that adjective twice now. But Nick, thank you so very, very much, man. I'm not going to keep you any longer. I asked you for 20 minutes, and we've probably gone twice that. We've done a Madiba here.
That's probably my fault. I always take a long time.
No, not at all. No, we love listening to you, man. But Nick, we'd love to have you again.
Congratulations on what your son has done to you. I'm really impressed with him. He's such a neat, he never makes mistakes. He's a tremendous leader for Glasgow, great captain. He carries himself well on the field. His way in which he chats to the referee is always, is always correct. You know, he's never threatening. He's always just inquiring. And then his play, you know, doesn't miss tackles, great under the high ball. You can be really proud of him. He's had a great career.
Thank you so much, Nick. And of course, the weekend after this one, we have the Stormers going to Scotstoun, and in a repeat of last year's quarterfinal. So yeah, lots to look forward to. But I truly appreciate those comments, Nick. But I just wanted to say thank you. We'd absolutely love to have you back, because it's this kind of depth of knowledge and the passion with which you speak about rugby is what's so commendable. So Nick Mallett, we thank you. Springbok royalty, thanks very, very much for joining us, Nick. And BizNews Tribe, look forward to a mouth-watering weekend of rugby, especially Saturday afternoon. The Investec Champions Cup final from Cardiff, Ordo Beg versus the Northampton Saints. Enjoy it.
And that was this week's episode of the BizNews Rugby Show. As always, BizNews Insider Rory Steyn, Springbok icon Nick Mallett, and myself, Patrick Kidd, from BizNews.com.